This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Everybody, good morning. How are you? It is Sports Daily. It is a Wednesday. Jacob Albrecht here alongside Paul Savage. It's a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday. We're both looking stylish, if I do say so myself, big fella. Hope everybody's joining our revolution that we're starting. It may be a two-man show, but we're going to live it, and we're going to do it well. Put on your best Hawaiian shirt and have fun on a hump day, because we're getting ready to take you toward another football week. We'll have some Kansas City Chiefs talk on the program today, get Paul's take on the weekend and looking ahead. And I'm starting to see, and this is driving me nuts, the Travis Kelce, you know, pop culture sports blend has taken an odd turn this week. So we'll dig into that a little bit as well. Chiefs make a roster move of note, I think, that we can discuss. We'll have Shreyas Lotta in this first hour to discuss KU sports with us, our KU insider. We'll have Kevin Saul, top of next hour, Wichita State Athletic Director, stopping by to get us all caught up on Shocker sports. We've got practices underway for the men's and women's basketball, volleyball in action. We'll get the latest on some projects there at Wichita State with Kevin Saul. That's coming again at the top of the next hour. Jad Chambers driving this ship. He's on the IHOP hotline at 869-1240. Glad to have Jad back in studio for us. He's also manning our voice message system through the Odyssey app. If you're listening to us through the Odyssey app, there's a little microphone on your home screen. If you've got something to say and you can't wait on the phone, you can push that button, leave your message. It sends it right to Jad, and he can then get it over the air. It's pretty cool. You can also, of course, watch us on our video streams. You've got us on 12 News Connected Plus. Love that we've got that on your smart devices. We've got Facebook, YouTube, and X. You can comment to us in those places as well, and we can get right to them. It is a good Wednesday, Paul. And not to bury the lead, the Royals finally get off the schneid. Oh. And it was wacky, and it was weird, and it was fortunate, and it looked like it was going to be another disaster, but it was not. And they get a Twins loss, which means the magic number, Paul, now with five games to play, is down to four games. Now, the Tigers win. The Mariners also lose, which is an added bonus. The Tigers do win, and the Tigers aren't slowing down at all. Right now, their wins and losses don't shrink the number necessarily because they're tied with Kansas City. But certainly, we would like to see them lose as well. But Kansas City sort of maintains. Remember, they own the tiebreaker over Detroit, so they move back into that second position of the wild card, Paul. And that is where we should start today, is with some Kansas City Royals baseball. Sigh of relief. They're not out of the woods by any means yet, but that certainly increases their chances ever so slightly to reach the postseason. It has been a weird 7 or 8 days. 1-0, extra innings over the lowly Nationals, scored the run on an error. But they score the run the first and 27 innings, Paul. Their pitching was masterful again. and it's enough to get the win.
You know, last time we were on together, and I can't even remember what day it was. We've been on a lot here lately together. But whatever day that was, you were visiting with me about momentum and how that feels, you know, towards the end of the year. Is it does a baseball manager, and we were using the Royals for example, do you want to see a team playing well going into the playoffs, or does it even matter? And obviously, I know both of us knew the answer to that, but it was still a very fascinating conversation. And right now, who would you rather be, the Detroit Tigers, or would you rather be the Kansas City Chiefs? Because I'm pretty darn sure you would say you like the momentum of the Detroit Tigers. I mean, sure. Right now, they are literally playing as well as they've played all year long at this very moment. The whole year. Well,
yeah, they're on an historic run here. I think I saw just this morning, no team has ever been 10 games back on August 10th and reached the postseason. And it sure feels inevitable for the Tigers at the moment. Now, look. 5 games to go. Right. They're not totally out of the woods yet either. They have a nice schedule. That's the reason everybody likes them so much, is because they get to finish the year with the White Sox, who have lost 120 games now. So that's a part of the reason for the Tigers that people like them so much. The Royals, after this series, have the most difficult final series because if Baltimore continues what it's doing, it's already, I believe, guaranteed a playoff spot. And they know, they kind of know their fate. So I believe it's the Twins that finish with Baltimore. That's that, that may not help you too much. And of course, the Royals get the tough road trip to Atlanta. In a best case scenario, Paul, this is wrapped up before that series with Atlanta. That best case would be a Royals sweep here of the Nationals and the Twins being swept in their series. So is that likely? Probably not. But, winning these games, they need to sweep this team, will make it a whole lot less stressful going into that final series. Minnesota and Seattle losing certainly helps. And maybe they'll get a little help with Detroit, too. And that would be really nice to see. But just winning a game, let's not get ahead of ourselves, Paul. Finally, 7-game losing streak. They hadn't scored in 27 innings. They had bases loaded opportunities twice in that game. Could not get any runs. And wouldn't you know it, it takes extra innings, a ghost runner, and an error on the play to get it done in a 1-0 win. Yeah. My goodness. No complaints, right? You don't complain. It doesn't matter. They got the win. This time of year, who cares how they got it? Doesn't matter. They got it. And, right. And that's what matters. But they have got to score some dang runs.
Well, the important thing to me, and by the way, you said, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Well, listen, I've been getting ahead of myself my entire life, so why stop now? But with that being said, it doesn't really matter that Detroit Tigers are going to play the White Sox. They've got 3 games to go out of what? I believe it's 5 games. I think it's 5 games. So they got
2 more against the Rays and 3 against the White Sox.
But that's not even the most important story with regards to Detroit. And that is the fact that right now in their last 10 games they're 8-2. Royals are 3-7. So you just look at those two numbers. Those are the two facts about right now what's happening that has to be reversed. In other words, I know this sounds crazy, and I know it's not possible, or at least I don't think it's possible, and that's that the Royals have to win 4 out of 5. I think for them to swing this momentum thing, and let's get this thing kind of, if you're the Royals, to get this thing, this ball rolling downhill again, hit the top of the hill and let it roll down a little bit, you've got to start playing very, very good baseball heading into the postseason. Because if they struggle through, or God forbid this will never happen, but let's say the White Sox win 2 of 3. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen, but let's just throw that out. And then you got a chance and makes you feel better. But even with the way the Royals are playing, it's not like they're crushing their. Last night, basically it was Bobby Witt getting a little creeper out that couldn't be handled and getting on base and driving in the winning run. It was one of those kind of games. It wasn't like it was done masterfully or powerfully or with authority or anything like that. So I look at the Royals and I think to myself, you got 5 games to kind of get this thing kind of going. And obviously the Braves are a very, very good baseball team. They're still in contention. I believe they're, 1 game back, maybe 2 games back from having one of the, clinching a spot in the wild card themselves. So the Braves got a lot to play for too, don't they? Braves.
Go ahead. And to your point of winning four or five, it's interesting because that would mean you get no help. Like, if that's what it takes, the Braves beat the Mets yesterday, which is probably not good news for the Royals because that keeps them in contention, by the way.
That's right.
But so if you're going to say the Royals win four out of five and that's their path in, that means they get no help from the Twins, basically, or the Tigers, potentially, which means those teams win all their games, which is not unreasonable. The Twins get two more against Miami and then three against Baltimore, an unmotivated Baltimore. Are the Twins, who are also playing poorly, going to win their last five games? I would tend to say probably not.
Probably not.
Even if there's one loss in there from the Twins.
That's right.
Right?
That's
one loss.
Okay.
Then you're looking at a situation where the Royals need to only win three of their last five. Right. But that still means you've got to win a game against the Braves. Okay. So I think it's going to be at least that, probably. I think that's at least going to be where it is. This Tigers Rays series is interesting because you can get a little help there too. But the reality is no matter how you want to calculate it, whether they get help, don't get help, don't put the cart before the horse. They need to sweep the Nationals. If they sweep the Nationals, we know at worst going into the final weekend, the magic number will be two, right? At worst, because let's say the Twins win their next two against Miami, which is probably, I would say, likely as much as possible. And the Royals win their two against the Nationals. No matter what else happens, their magic number is going to be at two going into that Braves series. Now, depending on what the Mariners do, depending on what the Tigers do, it could alter what comes into that last weekend. The bad news is the Royals lose a tiebreaker with the Twins. They win a tiebreaker with the Tigers. That's good news. It would be real handy, assuming that the Tigers are going to sweep the White Sox, if the Rays could get at least one game from the Tigers. Build that cushion a little bit. And that's possible, right? The Rays are scrappy. That was a really close game yesterday.
They're a 500 club. Yeah, it's possible.
So, you know, I think that when you look at it, but again, we're getting too far ahead of this. This is a team who lost seven straight games, the Royals, and finally got a 1-0 win in extra innings based on an error against the Nationals, one of the worst teams in baseball. Doesn't matter what we want to break down and analyze. They've got to be better than they've been, including last night. Last night, they finally got a shred of good fortune when over the past week, they've got none of it, right? The ball bounces the wrong way, so to speak, for a week now. So there's some karma built in, I think, to that a little bit. But you can't leave the bases loaded twice in a game like they did last night. They have got to figure out a way to manufacture some runs. And if it's not coming by big hits, which it's not right now, you've got to do something. Just do anything that you can. Scratch and claw. And the way they've been pitching for the most part, that's good enough, right? 3, 4, 5 runs a game will be good enough the way that they've been pitching. We learned yesterday two key things, that Lorenzen will get the start, which was a question of how they utilize Marsh. Marsh is going to go to the bullpen, which I think is the right call. Lorenzen will get the start. And then we learned two other, really three things yesterday. Vinny Pasquantino was getting an evaluation. I think we're waiting to hear the latest on his potential. His return wouldn't happen over these next five games. But Michael Lorenzen starts today. Marsh goes to the bullpen. And then we also learned that Hunter Harvey and James MacArthur, neither of them will be returning this year. That's a pretty big blow if the Royals can get there. I think you depended in a month ago, you had hoped that both of those guys would be part of a postseason bullpen. But the bullpen's been okay here lately. Urcik did a nice job last night. Mm-hmm. He just missed Joey Gallo was just feet from ending that game in a walk-off. And you just knew, like, you saw that swing and you're like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. But it didn't happen. It was, again, they got some good, you know, juju on their side in that game a couple of different times last night. But we get roster moves that aren't promising. We'll see what happens with Vinny Pasquantino. But again, and at this point, Paul, who cares? You got to win, right? You shrunk the magic number. And you shrunk it by 2. Went from 6 to 4. It's a whole lot different than it was yesterday. We mentioned the voicemail feature that we have on the Odyssey app. Let's go to that now. Ken chiming in via voice message through the Odyssey app. Here we go, Jeff.
Yes, the long national nightmare of a losing streak is over for the Royals. One bright spot over that losing streak, and this is courtesy of the Royals broadcast team, is that the bullpen had a strikeout-to-walk ratio of 37-8 and an ERA of 2.5. So a little glimmer of good news in that long, dark cloud of a losing streak. Go Royals.
Yeah, look, we appreciate Ken. A great Royals fan has been all season. The question I would have, Paul, is when you go through all of that and you finally get some good fortune like that late, do you think that takes the monkey off the back and lets them now loosen up and play well the rest of the way? Or they got lucky in the 10th inning on an error and we still don't feel good about the way this team is playing? Still, I think that becomes an immediate question in inning one, pitch one here tonight.
Right. Well, you know, these are still professional baseball players. They're being paid to play. So that's the good news is that, yeah, you're right. You know, you get that one, you're in a funk, you get that one, this is a chance to get out, and that's what it takes. See, you kind of swung me around. I was about ready to hop on you once again when you got finished with what you were saying, the points you were making. Very well said, and I certainly appreciate it. So I guess instead of hopping on you and saying, well, I think you're missing the point, let me just ask you this question. Which to you is more important? Because it's kind of self-obvious to me. Is it more important to play just well enough and hang on and get into the playoffs, or is it more important to be playing strong, get in the playoffs, play strong, go in playing strong?
And yeah, I mean, you got it. Momentum is everything in the postseason of baseball.
Right.
Hot teams do well. And the Royals have been one of the streakiest teams in baseball all year. I think about pretty often that if they can weather this, and I say pretty often, this is over the last, you know, 7 days. If they can weather this and they turn it around and you've been at that sort of rock bottom, now that can catapult you into a successful postseason.
Gotcha.
I am concerned about the amount of offense they would have in the playoffs, but I would keep going back to a couple of things. There's not a team in baseball that will boast a deeper top four in their rotation than Kansas City will in the postseason, I don't think. So they've got that going for them. I like their closer. They've got that going for them. I like their setup man. They've got that going for them. The offense has been bad, but they still do have, you know, two of the top 10, 15 players in the American League in Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvador Perez, my opinion. That can be enough. You got to have some other people contributing and doing the things. But the Royals are a swaggy, streaky team. If they can get there and they finish this stretch strong and basically re-earn their way in, I do think it's still a roster set up for success, Paul. I do still think this is a team that can have a lot of success once they get there if they're on the right end of a good streak. You know, if the postseason started a week ago, they'd have been out in the first round. But boy, if they can weather this and then get on one of their heaters, that's a team nobody wants to play because their starting pitching is so good.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's exactly right. And when you talk about, you know, the streakiness, I mean, it can happen to any baseball team. But on the other hand, you've got the American League East, New York Yankees, 92 wins, Baltimore Orioles, 87 wins. Kansas City Chiefs, 83 wins. It's not like those teams are running away from the Royals. The Royals are right there. And the good news is I hear my magic number 10 wins over, you know, over losses, you know, 83 and 74. Listen, this time last week we were talking on a Wednesday just like this. And what were we talking about? We were talking about the Royals. That little lead that I kind of look at every time I look at a standings. that number was down to six, or it was down to five. It was something five over, you know, 50% wins and losses. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, we can't have that. But, you know, even through this streak, they're hanging in there. They're nine games over 500. So I guess everything can be set. I'm still worried about the streak. It still bothers me. But we'll see what happens. The Guardians are 91-67, and that just that gives you pause. But you know, go in, get this job done. I guess the number one job, and you've convinced me that the number one job is getting the playoffs first. And sometimes I get ahead of myself. You ever notice that? Sometimes I get ahead of myself.
We just we had to completely rewire things because of the last week. That's what it is.
Well, that's right? Part of the problem.
Had to redo everything.
It's been a tough week, hadn't it? Been a tough week.
Yeah. But they get the win. They're down to two. All this baseball talk, by the way, brought to you by T-Mobile. Head to T-Mobile.com and get a great deal on the iPhone 16 Pro. We'll have a giveaway coming for you. We'll give away a little HTO today. Don't forget, you've got Royals baseball right here on KFH. That will be at 5:30. Pre-game coverage is a 5:45 first pitch out at Nationals Park in the nation's capital. We'll get more into that. We'll look at the matchup tonight, pitching and everything else as we make our way through the show. Sri Islada will join us in just a little bit to talk some KU football. Looking forward to that conversation. Maybe not looking forward to it is a better way to put it, as it's been just an absolute disaster for the Jayhawks. We've also got Wichita State Athletic Director Kevin Saul joining us in hour number two. It's a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday for all those who celebrate, so happy about that. It's all Brockton Savage. Get in touch with the show all kinds of different ways, and we'll be right back with more Sports Daily. Mornings at KFH. Staff enjoys a great cup of coffee from Prairie Fire Coffee. Always appreciate their ability to fuel us up each and every morning. Glad to be here. We've been talking Royals. Royals baseball is available for free here on KFH and the Odyssey app. You can tune in here tonight, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. That coverage begins at 5:30, or just simply download the Odyssey app and search for KFH at game time. It's that easy. Paul, real quick on the Chiefs, and we'll get into this Travis Kelce stuff. It's everywhere now. We'll do it in depth in the second hour, but I'm seeing like one of the news magazine shows spent their first 10 minutes, and it was on mute, so I didn't hear what they were saying, but I knew what they were saying. And then I see it on the headlines this morning. There's a shot of him looking morose on the sideline during the game, and everyone knows it was Travis Kelce. He's just not in. We'll get into all of that. Quicker Chiefs news, because this will be a quick segment before we get to Sri Islada. Kareem Hunt's added to the active roster. I think we all saw this coming. I didn't know initially whether they were bringing him in as a bet, but the last week when we heard Andy Reid and we heard Patrick Mahomes talking about Kareem Hunt, it became pretty clear to me at that point that, yeah, they want him to be in the mix. And so it doesn't take long. He's up to speed, apparently. They add him to the active roster, and he'll become that third running back. But what becomes interesting, and we talked to Dan Israel about this yesterday of the Chiefs Radio Network, I thought Carson Steele looked great, Paul. I thought Carson Steele and Samaje Perine, however, like that combination allowed the Chiefs to play the exact kind of offense they wanted to play last week against the Falcons. So now that we have Kareem Hunt there, what does he add to the table here? He's not the same Kareem Hunt he was the first time he was a Chief. The numbers and the you know, everything. Let's just put it this way. He was a free agent for a reason, Paul. So I'll be a little disappointed. I got to admit, if he comes in and you know, sort of takes the work from Carson Steele, this young prospect sort of that we're all intrigued by, I'll be a little disappointed if that happens.
Well, I get your point. But what he brings is he brings maturity. He brings a veteran way of looking at things. Hopefully he brings that work ethic. He knows that he's biding his time because he will hit the field. He will get to the field before this is all said and done. I can assure you that. He understands that. This might be the way he perceives one of his last hurrahs, his chance to make another paycheck for a couple of years. This is that tryout for that. So he has a lot riding on his shoulders, and I got a feeling he'll make the best of it. He's going to, I mean, let's face it, running backs, how long is your career if you're a running back? Not very long.
29's old. But the other thing that Dave brought up that's good is they still haven't been good in the red zone. Maybe he just comes in and is
maybe
a
he does. Back. There's another benefit.
I don't know.
That's exactly
and I don't even
correct.
Know how good at that he's been. I'd have to really look that up. But either way, that bit of news from the Chiefs. We'll get into the juicier stuff that Paul lives for in the second hour as it pertains to Travis Kelce. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, Sri Islata, our KU insider with KC Star, will join us to talk about the disaster of a season for KU football. Is it salvageable at this point? Well, we'll dig in a little bit on that as we make our way through that interview next. Don't go away. Sri Islata joins us when Sports Daily returns.
And 1240 KFH.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
It's that time, Sports Daily, getting all the inside information on the Kansas Jayhawks. Let's go now to the KU football and basketball beat writer from the Kansas City Star, Shreya Slatta.
And welcome in, everybody. Welcome back in. We are glad to have Shreyas in. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Get out there, check out the golf. These cool, crisp mornings, sunny, nice afternoons. This is as good as it gets. They got 36 holes of golf for you there. Great restaurant, great clubhouse, all kinds of good, you know, clothes and stuff in the pro shop. Maybe a good Hawaiian shirt, which we still can't get Shreyas to participate in.
Wow,
for some
Shreyas.
Reason.
Come on,
But they got you covered out there at Crestview. We appreciate their support. Get out there and tell them we sent you here from Sports Daily. Shreyas, we look like we're ready to celebrate here in our beautiful attire, but we are not when it comes to KU football. Between that and probably the strangest college football game I can remember in a very long time for K-State out at BYU, this dream season that we've had a really tough weekend. And for KU, it's been a really tough month. I don't even know what to say other than, is this thing still salvageable, do you think?
That is a very, very good question. I think every week that they are going to break the streak of losing, they somehow managed to lose in a way that it confuses me even more. I mean, they blew an 11-point lead in 5 minutes in the fourth quarter. That's the third straight game that they lost on a go-ahead fourth quarter touchdown. If you're a Kansas fan, I would probably be, you know, losing my mind. And as a writer, I'm losing my mind because I have no idea what's going to happen half the time in the games. And whatever you're writing, you can throw it out the window, takeaways and all. Is it salvageable? I think it is salvageable in the sense that the idea of a Big 12 championship is probably out of the window. But can you get a positive record above 500 and win a bowl game? I think that is still in the window. The way they've lost these games obviously has been the worst part. I think just inability to close fourth quarters, inability to close leads, giving up touchdowns at the end of first halves that have been, you know, kind of backbreaking and kind of, you know, balloon into the second half. It's weird because this team is older and a lot of the mistakes that are out there happening on the field doesn't feel like it an older team should be making. And I think ultimately the perception, like, you know, Lance has said, and he continues to say it's a long season, but it is a long season, but we're week five. It's week five right now.
Yeah.
They have Arizona State next week after this week, and then they have a bye week, their first bye week. So we're getting to a point where it's a long season is about to be, well, there's not that many games left. They have to start winning. I think that's the simple solution to that is I don't care who they're playing. They have to win. If you want any modicum hope of a Big 12 championship, you basically have to win out or maybe win, lose one more there. If you want any hope of playing in a better bowl game than last year, they probably have to win everything but one, the next eight or nine.
I'm going to be real honest. I don't think anybody in the world right now cares about a bowl game. You know, another get to a, you know, a decent bowl game. The expectations are too high. Like at this point, now we could get there if this continues to go south, but I don't think at the, on September 25th, I think if you polled 100 KU fans and said, hey, would you be happy playing in the, you know, Pop-Tarts Bowl? They would say, hell no, that's not going to be good enough. Not this year. So, and that's okay, right? That comes with expectations. I'm having a hard time with it. And I like, it's sort of the same story, right? They have been good enough. This should be a 4-0 team. And that's what's so odd about it. And at some point, they just aren't capable of winning games late, and that makes you a not good team. But there's still the possibility that it's a good team who's played really poorly at the end of games. And I only say that because you look at the schedule right now, it's still, we could call it favorable, maybe a little less so than it was, but you get three games here, TCU, Arizona State, Houston. Two of those are at home. Up until the K-State, where at the moment you'd play three straight ranked teams, two of those on the road. Can we compartmentalize it and just look at this and say, okay, everything sucks, but if they're 3-1 in the Big 12 going into that K-State game, that would feel pretty good. Also, they're still totally capable of being 3-1 going into that game. I don't think we've seen anything this year that would say those three teams are more talented than KU. They're certainly playing better, but they're not more talented. So then I would ask this, inside that locker room, you can't do any of that if this spirals out of control. Do you think it's spiraling out of control, or is there still a attitude, I guess, or an atmosphere that they could do that? They could win these next three games. Their confidence level is high. Where are we sitting with that aspect of things?
You know, I think it's interesting. I think their confidence level is still high. I think they still believe that they can turn around. I think they still believe that this team has not played up to the expectations they've set on themselves and people have set on them. And they know that. You know, they're a veteran group. If there's any team in the nation that I believe could make a run, you know, and win a couple of games, it's this KU group that's going to have 30 guys leaving after the end of the year. You know, to me, like I look at it, if you go back individually, look at the games and, you know, now we learned that Illinois is not as bad as everyone thought they were. I mean, they beat Nebraska, you know, with all the, you know, hype around them. You know, UNLV, let's withstand that the quarterback just left them last night. That's a whole nother thing. But they're 3-0 too. You know, they're vying for playoff dreams. So, like, they're not as bad losses as we once thought of what they were. But the expect, like, I think I saw this on Twitter. The chance of them losing those three straight games was, like, 0.17, like not even like 17%, 0.17, which is nuts. Okay. And I think this team knows that they are better than what they've shown on the field. I think they know they're more talented than the next three teams they play. I think they will, you know, they're not going to keep spiraling. I'd be very surprised if they keep losing. Like, I know TCU is a good team. They have a good quarterback, you know, like they're not, you know, what they were in 2022, then they're not, you know, maybe where they want to be, but they have a good team with a sophomore quarterback that's threw for 1,500 yards and 11 touchdowns and two interceptions. They don't have a run game, and they have a good pass defense, but a defense that struggles to contain the run. So in ways, KU matches up pretty well with that, right? You know, if this version of Jalen Daniels is out there where, you know, he's only thrown 150, 180 yards a game, then, well, that's fine because TCU only gives up 180, you know, yards, 150 yards per pass or in passing yards in a game. It's where they struggle to contain the run, and they can't establish the run. So I think it starts with Saturday. It starts with a win Saturday, and then I'll get into can they win the next two. Because my issue has been, and I think everyone has done this coming into the season, the expectation of what happened has not lived up to the reality. So I can't even tell you what's going to happen because I thought they were going to beat West Virginia. I thought they were going to bounce back. You know, they were winning that game by 11 points with 5 minutes to go. And they had an absolute, you know, disaster class of a finish. So to me, until I see them close a game, I will not be making any proclamations about this KU team. I need to see them beat TCU. And then after that, we can sit there and go into what are they? Where are they going to be? Are they going to be good enough to beat K-State?
Well, you know, Sharius, we have talked on this show the last couple of weeks how the defense isn't as bad. You know, I was a little critical of the defense last week. You know, that 10-minute drive, 18 plays, the fourth quarter, the defense is on the field for 10 minutes straight. And, you know, you give up a touchdown that ends up being the touchdown that beats you. And I was a little critical of that because you get off the field. That's what a good defense does. Three and out, get a pick, get a fumble. Who knows what happens, you know? But you get off the field. You get off the field is the sign of a good football team. Once again, let's just talk about the defense in the fourth quarter. West Virginia scored 15 points in the final 3 minutes and 27 seconds. 15 points. They win the game 32-28. Who saw that coming? With, you know, 5 minutes left in the ballgame. Who saw that coming? Because I didn't see that coming. And I guess we have to address situational defense for this team. Because they played well enough to win the game. But what's going on in the fourth quarter with this team? There's got to be something. And I don't know what it is, by the way. I'm just asking you. Maybe you do. I don't know. But what's going on with this defense in the fourth quarter that they can't seem to get off the field?
I don't think this is just a fourth quarter thing. I think it's just ending quarters in a bad way, ending halves in a bad way. We've had three straight weeks now where they've given a touchdown or a scoring play in the end of the first half and also the fourth quarter. It's clear that, you know, I think it's a lack of maybe a mix of the talent level hasn't played. Like Kobe and Melo have not been as good as last year. They haven't got as many picks as last year. They were getting burnt by a receiver that, you know, had not put up 100 receiving yards up to that point. You know, he had 130 yards or 120 yards, I think, in the first half. That's an issue. The pass rush, you know, is not as good as last year. They're not getting the quarterback. That's putting a lot of pressure at the corners, the safeties. And it feels like they're having to be out there on the field so much more because the offense can't go and sustain these long scoring drives. Like there hasn't been, I feel like, a continuous game where they've had game, you know, long drives that lead to touchdowns. It feels like either it's a touchdown and it ends maybe 5-6 minutes, which is decent. You know, you give a defense a little bit of time to recover, or the offense turns the ball over and the defense is back on. And now they're exhausted because they're playing too much, more than they've ever played. I think this defense is better than last year. But the two things that worry me, and it's the same thing I talked about before the season, was can they get to the quarterback? They haven't really done that great. Can they, you know, like they had three sacks against West Virginia, but they only had two QB pressures outside of that. You know, like the sacks were great, but what happened to getting the quarterback otherwise? Can they contain QBs from running? It seems like they had that figured out against Illinois. They've done a disaster job against UNLV and against, you know, West Virginia. You know, they've let up two straight quarterbacks run for 100 plus yards. That's still a weakness from last year. So you combine that with the secondary not playing as well, and then you have a game like last week where everything just falls apart and combusts because all the problems become apparent more than ever in those last 5 minutes.
Shreyas Lada joining us. You can find his work at the KC Star, football and hoops reporter there. You can also follow him on X at SHRE98. Shreyas, the other big thing coming into that game was Jalen Daniels. I think, you know, game plan wise, we saw what we wanted to see out of KU. They ran it with their two running backs 36 times. Daniels didn't contribute much in the run game. How do we evaluate his performance? I think I said it yesterday as somebody is like, that wasn't something that he needed to be pulled out of the game for, but it still wasn't vintage Daniels. And against that team, I would say I'm still concerned going into games against good Big 12 defenses, but how did you evaluate Daniels' performance in this one?
Well, I think it's kind of a mixed bag. I was talking to Carter Stanley about this. We're actually having a breakdown about Jalen's year, Jalen Daniels' year coming out probably today about what's going good and bad. It's weird because I asked Coach Lance Leipold about this yesterday, about if he thinks Jalen took a step forward in the right direction. And I think in some ways he did, right? He cut off a little bit of the turnovers, the fumble, whatever. Like, I'm not really expecting him to pull, you know, some miracle there. It seems like that late fourth quarter drive just hasn't really happened for them this year. But that pick was pretty bad. It's an issue that I think is compounded this year, is like staring down receivers, not seeing coverage underneath a lot of times. It's weird because he only threw for 180 yards against a really bad West Virginia secondary. I know passing yards are not the metric that really matters that much, but that to me is just kind of like a, well, this was a game that he probably should have thrown for 200 plus yards. Like the old Jalen Daniels should have hit 300 yards easy.
But 15 to 25, I mean, if they want to run the ball, which they did, I'm okay with it. It's the 15 to 25. Like peak Jalen Daniels completes 70% of his passes. He hadn't even sniffed that this year. That's like, he's just not accurate.
He's not. And that to me is like, I don't know what the issue is. If that's a fact that the offense is not putting him in the position to succeed in some ways. I think there's been a lack of motion this year a little bit compared to what Andy Kotelnicki had. And that definitely, you know, I think freed up some of his receivers and made it easier for him to pass. But there are some throws that he's been asked to make that I'm like, that's a difficult throw for Patrick Mahomes to make. You go back and you watch the Illinois game, and Carter mentioned this, but he had to roll left as a quarterback and throw it across the shoulders to Luke Grimm, and you know, he gets picked on that. That's a really hard throw, and to me, mechanically sound in throws where he's in the in you know, like leaning back, and you know, it looks cool, but it leads to mistakes. And I think he's not mechanically been as sound as he was in the previous years. There's definitely, I feel like, a little bit of factor of rust, but I don't think it's a lack of arm strength. This thing, I feel like the touch has not been there on passes. I don't think anything more than that. I think that's a big thing. I think he hasn't been reading coverages as well as he normally does. I don't know if that's a rust thing or maybe there's something that is a tell. And I also don't think, you know, the offense has really figured out the balance between run pass yet. Like there hasn't been a game where I'm like, okay, I think they did a good job of balancing both.
Right.
And they've made his job easier by, you know, running enough that he doesn't need to throw some tough passes. Like I think he went the entire first half last week without throwing a pass in the middle of the field. That tells to me that's a quarterback that knows he's not at his, absolute best. If he can't throw in the middle of the field, which is where Jalen was so dangerous the last 2 years, that is an issue in my mind. And I think this TCU game can balloon out of control real quick because this quarterback that they're facing is really, really good. He's a sophomore. He's thrown for 1,500 yards and 11 touchdowns.
Should be strength on strength. KU does come home as a 2-point favorite. Go to the KC Star. Check out Shreyas' story on a barbershop there in Kansas. Great feature. Also got a mailbag coming, Shreyas. Here we go. They got to get the win. We keep saying the same thing. They got to get the win, and you'll be there covering it for us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Great job. Great job. Shreyas
Lotta. Yeah, it's always really good stuff. What a wild year. For KU football. Shreyas has you covered at the KC Star. Follow him on social media. We'll have more on that throughout the week. We'll preview that game throughout the week as well. Let's take a quick break. When we return, Wichita State Athletics Director Kevin Saul joining us. We'll get all caught up on the Shockers. A lot of hoops, tidbits to get to as they're opening things up a little bit. A unbelievable, for some people, story, a massive story in the world of NIL breaking this morning. UNLV's quarterback stepping away. We'll see. We'll get into that in the second hour too.
Paul's
chomping at the bit on that one. All right, we'll come back. Kevin Saul joins Sports Daily when we return.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, Shocker fans, want the latest on Wichita State athletics? Let's go right to the source with Shocker AD Kevin Saul.
All right, and we are happy to bring in Kevin Saul. Let's quickly set up our HTO giveaway here as we start the second hour. Some free iced tea, more than 20 flavors, some free iced or hot coffee. You get one of each right now by texting the keyword tea to the short code 20357. That's TEA 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. These are good for any of the three Wichita Metro locations. Good luck, everybody. Kevin Saul joining us, and we get, look, the start of conference volleyball play is tonight. We've got basketball teams practicing. We are a week and change away from Shocker Madness, a ton of Wichita State happening. But Kevin, sometimes this happens. I feel like when you join us, it's fortuitous for us that we get these topical things falling into our laps. UNLV's quarterback stepping away because he's not getting what he was promised through NIL. This is a fear for people. I know Paul just is, you know, his head's spinning on this. But I would just say initially, like, and you've told us before, there are a lot of promises unkept in this NIL world, and that's a problem. But could you imagine if a coach or anyone else on campus was told they would be compensated some way and then they weren't? How do you think they'd react? I would say, you know, to people, like, hang on a minute, take some grace to this and understand, like, if this person was promised something and it wasn't delivered, you'd probably be pretty upset too. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having us on. You know, it's the system is not set up for success from an accountability and transparency and clarity standpoint. I think what amazes people when you start talking about NIL and these quote unquote offers that occur as a part of the recruiting process, none of it's in writing. There are no agreements. And we've got firsthand experience with some of the folks that we're coming up against in recruiting. Where we know that we have some wrongdoers in the industry that are saying, hey, you tell these kids whatever it takes to get them to campus and we'll repair the relationship when they get here. And that's absolutely not the way that we're going to manage our business at Wichita State. We're going to underpromise and overdeliver and do things the right way. Because at the end of the day, guys, it'll catch up to you. We all have been around and been on this journey long enough to know that if you handle your business the wrong way, it'll catch up to you, and it's certainly not worth that.
Well, you know, I guess I've just got to follow up with the question because it's such a good question that Jacob asked, and I've used this example. I don't think I've used this with you, but it was probably 30, 45 days ago. If you remember, John Calipari left Kentucky and went to Arkansas. Big deal. Ends up at Arkansas. And one of the demands, this is the story that I got, and I can't remember where I saw it, but I saw it on one of the news productions. Calipari demanded, if he's going to take the job at Arkansas, he demanded $15 million in NIL guaranteed. Now, you have what? How many scholarships we got in basketball? 12? I believe it's 12. Is that right? 12 scholarships?
You got 13 on the men's side and 15 on the women's side.
13. That's it. 13. So that means that basically everybody who signs a scholarship on that roster is going to get $1 million a year because that $15 million is going to go to players and NIL. How in the world does that make that possible to really compete in recruiting with somebody who's going to say, you know, we can give you $1 million. Come to Arkansas and you'll be guaranteed $1 million. And by the way, that money, from what I understand, it came from people with the last name Walton or a bunch of them. There's a chicken, and I can't remember the name, but it's a famous name of somebody who owns a bunch of chicken, you know.
Paul.
What?
How much is John Calipari going to make? They got how many good basketball players are there across the country?
$4 or $5 million a year.
Seven. How many great basketball players are there across the country?
That's where I was going to go with this, right? There's more than the 15 that might land in Fayetteville. And
okay,
what I think's really interesting, guys, is when you look at, you know, the old RPI has transferred to the net. When you look at the strength of the American last year, we were seventh in the country of 32 leagues, right? Not a bad place to be.
No, not really.
You've got the Power Five. This is pre Pac-12 meltdown. You've got the Power Five. You've got the Big East, and then you've got the American in terms of strength of league in men's basketball. And so what's interesting with that is that if you've got players that are outperforming leagues 8 through 32 and they're looking to level up, they got to go through the American before they go anywhere else. And so that certainly puts you in a beneficial spot. If you've got young people that are in the top six leagues that they're just not getting the playing time, it's not successful for them, they're coming through the American before they go down any further. If you've got young people performing in the American, they're probably going up. If they're not, they're probably going down. So what I would suggest to you is the data is showing us the last 4 or 5 years that the combination of transfers in and out is the greatest in the American than it is any other league in the country, because I would submit we're kind of the portal within the portal as players transition. Wow. That being said, the average team in our league last portal season lost 8 players to the portal, okay? Wichita State had 3 go through the portal. And so that continuity has been good. We've got 5 of our top 7 scorers returning. We've got 2 really talented freshmen, 4 through the portal, and then a young man from Croatia that we're working through some eligibility on. So I like the roster continuity. It's not the continuity that you guys and I are used to from the last 10 years.
Well, that's for sure.
Respectfully against our peers, it certainly is better.
Well, I think that has to become the goal too, right? As we talk about NIL and I don't know if it's better or worse than when it started. Obviously the UNLV situation shows a flaw, but if retention has to be the goal, and I think it is for you guys, but get them in there and then keep them there. That I think this offseason has been a step in that direction. Whereas, you know, the I don't know how long it's been now, 5, 6, 7 before, transfers out has been one of the biggest challenges for the Shocker program specifically. That wasn't as much of a challenge this year, and I would imagine that feels pretty good, and it feels like steps in the right direction for y'all.
It certainly does. Now, you have to be retaining high-quality young people, and we feel like we have with 5 of the top 7 scorers returning. At the end of the day, Coach Mills and I are both aligned that we think the true power in NIL is on a retention standpoint. It's not necessarily the acquisition. When I think retention, I think relational. I think development. I think relationships. When I think recruiting, I think transactional and acquisitional, if you will. And so we both firmly believe that, you know, NIL's power truly is in the retention, because our young people want to feel valued. They want to feel like we're loyal to them. We want to build great relationships, and that's certainly been the case so far.
It's a great transition to men's hoops as we've gotten practice and we've looked. Word on the street is, and I'm going to butcher his name, Mate Boniak, it might be a baller. He looks pretty good. I know people are excited about him. What have you seen in practice that should get people excited? And then you mentioned some eligibility stuff. Where are we at with his ability to play?
Yep. So first and foremost, fantastic young man. He is from a personality, relational. He is unbelievable. Every time you see him, he's going to walk up to you and he's going to make eye contact. He's going to shake your hand and he's going to ask you how your day is. He's a phenomenal young man. He's a really, really talented basketball player. Obviously, he has competed in Europe at a really, really high level, and it shows. He is a man amongst boys at times, and he's got a really unique game from my perspective. He can score down low, and he's got great post moves. He also can shoot from the outside, and he's got great size and is agile and can move. So if and when we can get him to a good spot from an eligibility standpoint, he will be a tremendous asset for our club. Now, I won't go too deep into the details because it gets really convoluted really fast. But at the end of the day, every student athlete that competes in the NCAA goes through what's called the Eligibility Center. The Eligibility Center is a separate entity from the NCAA, and they have really strict, stringent guidelines. So if you don't check all 10 boxes on the Eligibility Center's list, they're not going to deem you eligible, whether that's a academic eligibility issue or if it's an amateurism issue. And so what we've done is transitioned to an NCAA function now, which is the student athlete reinstatement process. And it really boils down to, guys, whenever you're dealing, whether it's basketball, we see it in soccer, sometimes in tennis, is the European model is very different. And the eligibility center defines a professional athlete. Like, let's just say, envision a column, right? Envision that you've got a professional, you've got an organization that plays basketball in Europe. Okay. It might start out as age groups. You might have a U12 team, then you got a U14, 16, then you get to the premier and elite teams. And the way the eligibility center works is they look at actual necessary expenses based on any compensation that you got from that organization. And if your compensation exceeds actual necessary expenses for, you know, housing, utilities, food, transportation, all those things, they deem you a professional. So the EC, the eligibility center, looks at the highest paid player in the league or in that particular organization and defines everybody in that organization as a professional. Well, that's not necessarily accurate nor fair. And so what we've done is a real deep dive into actual necessary expenses, compensation, all those things. We feel like we've got a really good case. We submitted to the student athlete reinstatement group yesterday, searching for a resolution to this prior to the closed scrimmage against Oklahoma State on October 12th.
Well, that's a tremendous that's tremendous, and it's a great thing. I want to visit just a moment about the schedule. I mean, looking over the schedule, I looked it over a couple days ago, and I thought to myself, I really like this schedule, Kevin, and here's why. I like the revisiting with a couple of Missouri Valley teams. You know, that's still a big part of the history of this basketball program, the Missouri Valley, whether we like it or not. That's still a big history. You got a couple of those teams on there. You've got some great teams here in the state of Kansas, Emporia State, Friends University. I'll get to that in just a second. You've got a great tournament. You've selected a great tournament down in Florida. You've got a Big Ten team. You got an ACC team. And you got an SEC team and Wichita State. I think that's perfect. I like that. There's a lot I like about this particular schedule. But I wanted to ask you a question with regards to the Kansas teams that you're scheduling. And I don't mean Kansas State, because you have them on December the 21st. I'm talking about Friends and Emporia State. Wichita State, knowing your predecessors as well, and I know it's probably the same with you, there's a great need in helping these teams, you know, survive, do well, advance their cause at their level. Talk a little about, how did you decide Friends? How do you decide Emporia State? How do you decide which teams to help in terms of scheduling them with Wichita State? Two things happen. Those kids will play before a number of people they'll never play in front of in their entire career. And the other thing is obviously financial. It's a big boon. But I like picking Friends to play a game with. It's local. You know, having coached football there for 10 years at one point in my life, it was it's a wonderful school. What goes into selecting that local team?
It's a great question. So, you know, we played Friends last year,
right?
And I would tell you that scheduling is both an art and a science, and there's some projection to it. It's there's certainly an art. You got to do your research, and you got to understand who you're scheduling and what their performance is, and the NIL and transfers really messes with that like it hasn't in the past. But at the end of the day, the goal is to create about four or five things. The goals are to create a schedule that's going to put us in at-large consideration for the NCAA tournament should we not win the conference basketball tournament. We feel like we've done that in terms of the number of projected quad one and quad two games that are on this schedule. The other element is, you know, most teams are going to schedule a handful or less in quad four as well. Every team has a guaranteed budget. Wichita State has about $500,000 that we use for guarantees to pay teams to come in, and that market's anywhere from 60K to maybe 100K per game. The Emporia States, the Exhibitions, and the Friends are obviously a lot smaller than that. But at the end of the day, that's the balance on the schedule. If you were to take a team sheet and you were to look at the quads and you were to flip that team sheet over, you really want it to look kind of like a bell curve. You want to see obviously a few in quad one. You want to see a lot of twos, a little less threes, and a little less fours. That's the ideal as it shakes out. To answer your question, Paul, I think back to when I was growing up in Manhattan and we were watching the Jayhawks and Coach Williams do his thing. He made it a point. He took pride in bringing in the Fort Hays States, and the Emporia States, and the Pitt States, and the Washburns to come in and experience that, keeping money in the state, helping these programs within the state. I certainly think there's an element to that. There's a geographic proximity element to it, and we'll continue to do that. The important piece to understand is obviously you get an exhibition, and typically teams will play maybe one non-D1 as a part of their regular season. They either put it early or they put it when they're coming back from Christmas break, going into the holidays. And what's interesting, Paul, is what the Nets are showing us over the last few years. You're better off scheduling a non-D1 from an at-large perspective than spending $60,000 to $100,000 on a quad four game where the net might be 300 to 360. You're going to be hurt more by playing that quad four 300 to 360 than you are if you play a non-D1 that doesn't count. You look at the team sheets the NCAA committee looks at the end of the season when they're selecting. There's a little spot right down there at the bottom that says non-D1, and ours will obviously say friends, but it doesn't count in the overall net calculation.
Wow.
That's pretty interesting.
I did not know that. That is fascinating.
So a couple of housekeeping before we get you out of here. Volleyball starts conference play tonight on the road at Memphis. Shocker fans, that home opener is 7 o'clock on Friday against Temple. The next time we talk to Kevin, we'll have a real good gauge of volleyball because they'll be into conference play. But before we let you go, Kevin, I want to ask you about Shocker Madness because it will happen before the next time we talk to you. A week from Saturday, 6:30, and it sounds like there are a couple of new features. I know this is a big event for you guys. So what should fans know about and make plans for if they're getting out to Shocker Madness this year?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is obviously a great event. We've tried to transition a little bit about it is truly a basketball event at its core, but we also try to introduce all of our student athletes in front of the crowd. So from all of our teams, and I think that resonates really, really well with folks. We've got a great week planned. It's Shocktoberfest next week, which is Wichita State's version of homecoming. And so you've got events from Saturday and Sunday all the way through the end of the week. And athletics's contribution to that is in a number of areas, but particularly with Shocktoberfest. Last year, we did the Tech 9 concert afterwards. So that drew some folks in. This year, they're looking at doing a drone light show afterwards as well. So hopefully the weather cooperates with us. Paul has volunteered to be the lead on the weather.
That's it.
So we'll hold him all accountable if that doesn't work. But it's a great night, right? You're going to see some unique competitions. We introduce staff players and do all those things. But we've got a three-point shooting contest where we're going to pair up one of the women on our women's team and one of the student athletes on our men's team. They'll compete as a duo. We'll do a little tournament bracket. So it's just a lot of fun. And we encourage folks to get into Charles Koch Arena. And at the end of the day, guys, we've got season ticket packages that are starting as low as $300. That's the cheapest ticket. It's a brand new ticket, 125, 126, that we've offered in the last 10 years, 12 years. And so we're trying to get folks back into Koch Arena. I think we've got some really good things going on with both Coach Nooner and their staff. Brought in 9 new players. There's some real athleticism, and he thinks he's going to go probably 9 or 10 deep on this team. They want to play fast. They want to press. They're doing some really good things. And now is the time. We are headed in the right direction in both of those programs. Would encourage folks to go to GoShockers.com or call our ticket office at 316-978-FANS, F-A-N-S, and get your season tickets today. At $300 a season ticket with 16, 17 home games, it's pretty good value.
Yeah, it's now's the chance. Yep. And we'll
now's
see
the
some
time.
Of players. Yep. And we'll have Coach Mills on as we get closer to the season. I think people are starting to get excited about this roster. Careful what you wish for on Paul and the weather. He's got an anti-rain dance. He's got his Hawaiian buttoned up to his chin right now. That anti-rain dance, those buttons come down, baby. So just be careful. Be careful out there.
I got you.
Shocker Madness next Saturday. Not this Saturday, but next Saturday. Looks like it's going to be fun. Brew Garden, Fan Fest, all kinds of stuff. GoShockers.com. Kevin, we appreciate it. Thanks for the insight here, and we're getting close to basketball season.
Yes, we are.
Let's go. Guys, thanks for having us on the show.
Great job today.
Kevin Saul. Yeah, appreciate the visit. Good to have Kevin on the video stream for the first time. Always love that.
Yeah, yeah.
Great stuff there. If you want to go back and listen to any of it, a little bit there on this UNLV situation, you can go back on the Odyssey app. That gets podcasted out. We're going to expand on that a little bit when we return. What exactly happened? What do we make of it? Also, this Travis Kelce. I don't even know what's happening here, but it's, you know, all this drama llama stuff. This is right up Paul's alley. So we're going to get into that as we go through hour number two. 869-1240, if you want to chime in on that IHOP hotline, you can.
That's good.
Here we go. Sports Daily rolling forward. Hour number two coming right up.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Odyssey's I'm Listening initiative aims to encourage those who are dealing with mental health issues to understand they're not alone. It's okay to not be okay. We know the power of talk can save lives. The I'm Listening broadcast aims to share valuable resources for those who need to connect, heal, and share their own stories. Radio personality and co-host of NBC's Today and The Voice, Carson Daly, and Odyssey's nationally syndicated country host, Katie Neal, will return to host that broadcast, 7 o'clock, that annual I'm Listening broadcast special. It'll be found tonight on KNSS, KEYN, 105.3 The Buzz, and Power 93.5. Then you'll get a replay after Royals baseball tonight here on KFH at 10 o'clock. Welcome back into Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Paul Savage with you on this Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. We got into this just a little bit with Kevin Saul. Matthew Sluka is leaving UNLV because he was promised something through NIL that wasn't delivered, and he wants to maintain his red shirt year. Let me frame this to you in a way, Paul, that I think should be the way we look at this.
Okay.
Here's a college athlete that graduated from Holy Cross, I believe it was, had an opportunity. He's not going to go play in the NFL, most likely. Had an opportunity after graduating from a school that he committed, you know, spent a lot of years for, to go try to make probably the only money he'll make as a football player over his lifetime. He gets a call from a coach. We'll give you $100,000 to come to UNLV. Awesome. Let's go see what kind of a special season we can have. Let's let all that hard work pay off for a year. Get to UNLV, and all of a sudden, that was just window dressing. You get nothing. You still have the opportunity to live that dream. You got screwed over by one school, but you know what? Right now, if I take the step right now, I can preserve the ability to go do that again. I have absolutely no issue whatsoever with this. If what we're being told is true, Pete Thamel reporting, and this is through the representative of Matthew Sluka, that an assistant coach promised $100,000 to transfer there. All they've basically given him is a small relocation stipend. And, you know, it was never about they got off to a hot start and he wanted more money. It wasn't any of that. It was that his promise to come there in the first place wasn't being delivered upon. Would you not do the same thing? Like, he gets one opportunity, Paul, to make any money off of his ability as a football player. And it's this season after graduation. I have no issue with this. I have far, far, far more issue if it's You know, if you believe his representation that UNLV promised something like that and then delivering on it, that is the issue we need to be talking about here. But you're going to see people up. Oh, this selfish college kid, NIL. Oh, it's all about the money. Everything in life's all about the money. Get over it. Come on. Put yourself in his shoes. Put yourself in his parents' shoes. How furious would you be if he was promised that and it wasn't delivered? I got no issue with this.
Well, I'm a little naive to speak on this thing because I thought these guys would sign a contract. You know, you got, you know, we visited about all those guys, you know, all the basketball players at the University of Arkansas are going to end up being millionaires for 1 year. They're going to be a millionaire at the end of the year. I get that. You know what I thought? You know what I thought, Jacob? How naive am I? I thought they were signing an agreement. I thought there was an NIL agreement.
Not yet.
Well, I thought there was, and I thought to myself, you know, everybody knows what everybody's promised. And I can remember back in the early days. In fact, I remember a radio show where you and I were talking about in the early days of NIL and how the schools were trying to keep it kind of on the low. You know, let's not discuss this too much. Let's not tell anybody about how much we've guaranteed this player or that player. And remember, you and I had a conversation. I remember this. And it was on the air. I remember this just like it was yesterday, where we had the conversation about how do you keep NIL and the money they're paying secret? Because the kid says, I'm going to get from ABC University, I'm going to get $100,000. And we talked about this specifically. The first thing he does is he sees grandma. And grandma says, oh, where are you going to school, grandson? And he says, I'm going to ABC University. And grandma, they're going to give me $100,000. Well, by Sunday morning rolls around, everybody in her church is going to know her grandson is going to ABC University and they're going to get $100,000. You can't keep a lid on this. We figured that out pretty – we kept that
– It's a badge of honor for these athletes too, Paul. Like it's just like the pro athletes. They want to know that they're making the most.
That's right.
You know, and that part, again, if you're bothered by players being compensated, you're going to have to just be left behind. We're so far past that now the focus needs to be about how do we come up with a system that benefits the schools and the players. Kevin Saul mentioned it, and he's not the first, but we hear this all the time. There are bad actors out there promising kids things that it just doesn't matter what happens. You just get them on campus and you deal with it later. That is happening. You can hear that right from the people involved with it. Mm-hmm. I think eventually, and the problem is there's a lot of other factors being worked out in court and all these things. Eventually, you'd like to get it to the point where this is all cut and dry, right? Here is the agreement for you to come. And that's why the schools are going to have to get involved. Here's the agreement. Here's what you're going to make. Boom. You sign the dotted line and we're done. There's still this blend of old school, you know, money in a sock through some representative under the table way that things were happening when you were playing college
Feels
football.
Feels like
Paul.
It. Yes.
And this new world of front facing, like, look how much money I'm making. Look at this bling. Look at this car. Look at this XYZ. There is going to be a settling of things. It's complicated, right? And so when we see things like this story, that an athlete was allegedly promised something that was not delivered upon, don't always immediately take the side of the school. Don't always immediately take the side of the coach. Don't always immediately say it's a selfish player, XYZ, any of this. Just think about it for a second and put yourself in those shoes and ask yourself what you would do if somebody told you, I'm going to pay you $100,000 to come do this job, and then you begin to do it, and you do it really well, and they just don't pay you.
Mm-hmm.
How would that make you feel?
I got
it. What would your reaction to that be?
Mine might be
Think
I
about
leave.
It that way.
I might say.
More than leave if we're talking about, you know, reality of this thing. Like, I'd be pissed.
Right, I would.
Like, that's not an indictment on him as a teammate. That's real life stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, this kid probably has one opportunity to earn a living as a football player, and it'll last a year.
Mm-hmm. And he
wasn't delivered on.
And you're asking, how do we solve this? Obviously, there's got to be a contract. There's got to be a contract between the school and the player. It's got to be signed. It's got to be a real contract. It's got to be a binding contract. And obviously that's not being done because he's already left school. He's gone. He's left because he wanted to protect his year, and he's played four games, and according to the rules, from my understanding, he can still redshirt or he can still leave and presume to be able to save a year of eligibility, which he needs to do. So with that being said, I understand that. But obviously, there are you know where I always thought the biggest problem would be? I thought it would be with an individual advertiser, an individual business, not the university that would cause the problem. This is why I'm kind of caught back. I'm kind of caught in a little bit of shock and disbelief, because this is the university saying, or evidently is being said to have not performed what they agreed to. I always thought it would be that car dealer, that one car dealer or a hardware store or a restaurant, who name the business, who would say, you know something, you're not playing well enough, and you're not getting us enough recognition. I'm not going to pay you the NIL that I promised that I would pay you. That's where I thought the problems would come. I mean, and I think of Archie Manning. I mean, let's think of Archie Manning. I mean, here it was the most publicized quarterback, I think, of the last decade, and he ends up going to Texas. He doesn't even start at Texas. But word was he was making $7, $8 million. Now, all that was not from the university, Jacob. A lot of that money was going to be used from advertising of who there, whatever, all throughout the state of Kansas. Hi, I'm Arch Manning, and I drive a car from this dealership, or I eat breakfast every morning over here. But the point is that somehow this has got to get to a point where when somebody is promised something, that will be fulfilled. And that's going to take a contract. And that's going to take a standard, probably a standard contract across the entire NCAA. Yeah,
you got sort of two different things happening. The car, the true NIL, and that a company pays an athlete for representation, that stuff gets put in a contract. It's this other money, right? It's this collective money, right? That's not tangibly to one place, but from a collective, and coaches just out there, I don't know, making stuff up, basically. We're told from a lot of different people. You just heard it from Kevin Saul. I've heard it, Paul. I can't tell you how many times I've heard it from coaches, from all over the place, say the same thing. There are people out there promising these kids things that are made up, and then they just get them there, and then they just deal with it when they're there. And you know, kids are like, well, what the hell else am I going to do? I guess I'll just play. I got screwed. Well, not this time. And I'm glad he's standing up to it. And eventually, again, I would guess that in 5 years, Paul, this is not really a problem because everything will be laid out. You'll have revenue sharing. Here's what it is. Here's what you can earn. You can go do your own separate NIL with business opportunities. But as far as the school's got to be able to step in and regulate this so they can put pen to paper.
Right.
Because it's going to benefit the schools, too, to not have liars out there abusing these relationships to get to these kids. That benefits the schools.
Right.
Right? To have it all front facing.
Right. And the thing that scares me, and here's what really scares me, is the fact that these kids are making these decisions based upon the word of a university, the word of somebody like that. And these kids are making decisions. A lot of these kids are helping mom and dad. A lot of these kids are helping grandparents. They're making the life better. It's not all about the car sitting in the parking lot. Or it's not all about the bling that you're able to buy with the money that you're getting. It's about coming back and sending that money home. A lot of these kids are helping mom and dad with their house, with a car, with whatever that might be. And when moms and dads make arrangements to help do something with the house or maybe even buy a house, that money needs to be fulfilled because that is life-changing money. And it's life-changing if they don't get that money. I mean, it really changes your life.
It is. And that's, I always say, put yourself in the position of being that kid's parent. We've all lived enough life. By the time you've got a college kid, we've lived enough life to know if you've got an opportunity like this, you cannot waste it. You have to take every advantage, every opportunity. When you have a short window to go earn that, and everyone, like, it's not just the millions and millions and millions. That's pretty obvious. If it was $100,000 for this kid, Paul, $100,000, mm-hmm. if that's what he's promised, okay? I started my professional career making $7.25 an hour. I think I made $17,000 a year right out of college. Now, I chose my profession, but what I would say is there aren't a lot of people right out of college who are going to do anything professionally that earns them that kind of money. That's, most people.
That's life.
And so you have this unique and rare opportunity. Be glad that the kids are. There are coaches making buyout money in the tens of millions of dollars. And we don't even, we're just like, whatever, go find a new coach. What about that money? You're like, so just
good point.
Put yourself in their shoes. Put yourself in their shoes before you shake a stick at this quarterback for standing up for himself. Understand that in the same circumstances, if you were in them, you would do the exact same thing. And if you don't, good for you. The rest of us would. Nobody wants to be taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. He's smart enough to know, you know what? I can still do this, but this is the path I have to take right. to be able to do it. And I'm really sorry to my teammates. I hope they're awesome. I hope they're great, but I cannot pass up this opportunity. It's just a bad decision.
Right. And of course, you know, other schools that recruit against UNLV, they're going to use this like a club over the head of the UNLV.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is going to get dinged all the time. Oh, I wouldn't go to UNLV. They don't keep their promises. You know, you saw right. the quarterback.
Yeah, that's what should happen. They
and
should.
That's right. This. That's what should happen. If you're going to screw a kid and make promises and then not fulfill them, the world needs to know, Jacob. The world
Absolutely.
Needs to know.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a quick break. 869-1240 on the IHOP hotline. We can get your thoughts on it. We'll also, Paul's heating up.
Oh,
top button's coming loose on that Hawaiian.
It's loose now, baby.
We're going to talk about this Travis Kelce non-story that keeps annoyingly finding its way into my stratosphere when we return on Sports Daily.
That's funny.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back into Sports Daily, everybody. Jacob Albrock, Paul Savage on a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday. Travis Kelce, not afraid of a nice Hawaiian. Travis Kelce, a lot of people trying to make a lot about his 8 catches for 69 yards this year. Paul, what's the Chiefs record?
Well, the last I checked, it was 3-0.
Who won the last two Super Bowls?
Well, the last time I checked on that one, it was the Kansas City Chiefs.
Folks, Travis Kelce's 34 years old. What he's already done at his age is pretty unchallenged in NFL history. Okay, even the great Tony Gonzalez didn't do what Kelce has done over his career, the consecutive and the continued greatness. He is being relied upon to block more. They're a run first team for the last year and a half, or last year and 3 games. He is being double covered because they are not deep at wide receiver. Why is this all, like, why do people immediately, like, yeah, he did some acting in the offseason. Yeah, he traveled around with his pop star girlfriend. Like, this is Travis Kelce, who loves football as much as any human has ever loved football before. Patrick Mahomes is in every commercial on television. He owns or is a part owner in 2 other sports franchises. He jet sets around the world to do all of these appearances, and nobody's ever batted an eye. Patrick Mahomes is struggling a little bit this year, too. Why are we looking at Travis Kelce in this light? The Chiefs are 3-0, Paul. He's 34. Like, what is the issue? I don't understand. Because he looked morose on the sideline on a camera shot of the game, he rubbed his eye. Like, what do people think is going on here?
Well, isn't the definition of morose in a person might be kind of subjective? It might be, well, does he? I mean, to me, he does or he doesn't.
He's 34 years old at a position where guys don't, like, it's one of the more difficult positions to play in football by all accounts. But a player that has to be basically an offensive lineman and a wide receiver at the same time, there is historically an age cap on it, and he's reached it.
Well,
and I don't think, I don't think, by the way, Chiefs fans are doing this. I think Chiefs fans are fully aware that Travis Kelce's role has changed over the last 2 years because they've become a run first team as much as anything else. Mm-hmm. And because defenses are choosing to take him away. But like, and I guess, look, I shouldn't be surprised. And it doesn't really make me that mad because you date Taylor Swift, the biggest star in the world, and you're going to have this kind of stuff come along with it because people that are very casual to what's happened over the course of his career and everything else are just going to try to invent and cook up some narrative that to me just is so far off base. It's laughable.
Well, but the thing is, a woman has entered his life. A woman is now involved in his day-to-day. A woman, Jacob. It's a woman. We all know that women don't fit in the world of football players while the football season's going. Well, that's not quite true, is it? A lot of married
guys. Paul, just the listeners, Paul's making fun
I'm
of
being
people out there.
I am, and I get that. But the point is that, you know, not all women are the same. I mean, let's face it. This one's a little different. This one will attract the media, will attract paparazzi, What? Am I off
Travis on Kelce was the main character of a reality dating show in the middle of his prime.
I know.
None of this is new to Travis Kelce. He has always been a character. He has always had other interests. He was on Saturday Night Live. He was a reality star. Like, this stuff isn't new. You've got a player who's reached an age at a position where guys typically fall off a little bit that's being asked to do something completely different now than he ever has been. Mm-hmm. There's nothing. The Chiefs are 3-0. Now, I would say this. If they were 0-3 and Kelce was struggling, maybe I'd have a little bit more of a problem with it.
Yeah.
But they're winning these games, which is so clearly all he cares about and has for a long time. That man wants to win this third straight Super Bowl.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
Period, period.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes just wants to win the third. Like, they do not care about that stuff right now.
Right.
Travis Kelce's compensated fairly. Finally, Patrick Mahomes doesn't have to, like, they don't have to worry about any of that stuff. Their numbers are completely irrelevant. They just want to win a third Super Bowl. But, so until they stop winning games, let's stop worrying about any of it.
Yeah. But there are people that are going to say, but this isn't the same Travis Kelce. I know we're trying to run the ball more.
He's not. He's 34 years old.
His role, what he is being used for, his ability to be used in what? We've seen him use, what, 4, 5, 6 positions in the course of a football game. All the way from tight end to X to Y to Z to an A-back. We've seen him used all over the field. And that's not happening the way it used to be. And I just think that people are going to say, well, where is the Travis Kelce that we've had in the past? Because as we speak right now, Travis Kelce has, he's only averaging,
Eight catches, 69 yards.
Yeah, that's it. So, I mean, he's averaging less than 3 catches a game. This is not the guy that we're used to. This is not the guy. And the fact that he's dating the most famous woman in the world has nothing to do with it. This is a decision by the Kansas City Chiefs to refocus this team in a way. And how do we know this isn't a deal where, you know, we're going to need Travis Kelce in the second half of this year?
True. And
we're
he and the coaches said that before the season.
And postseason.
They know
they've got to
put a governor on him early. They know that. He knows that. He said he learned that last year. My body is telling me that I have to do things a little bit differently because he's an older player.
Right.
That's just the way it goes. All right. We spent just a couple of minutes on there because I think this is getting out of control.
By the way, let me just point this out. You had your wife's been a blessing to you. She's been good for you. I don't care what you say.
I wouldn't disagree at all. Best thing that ever happened to any of us. 869-1240. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up. Tell you what's on the network next.
That's fun.
Ready to take your business to the next level?